Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's a movement. It's a revolution. And I'm excited to be a small part of it.
Rich Campbell.
I'll get up with you. Have some coffee.
Chicago Tribune Bears beat writer.
Everything that happened, every last word is in my notes.
Bringing you the latest from Hallis Hall.
The season is so much longer. It's so much harder to get to the final game and win the final game. But we're hoping for a lot of those hub-dub.
Asking hard-hitting questions.
What impressed you about Leonard Sack?
Rich Campbell with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Rich Campbell is on Twitter at Rich_Campbell, and he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Bernstein and McKnight, and what a weekend it was. I admit to being impressed and surprised by the depth to which the connectivity occurred with this Bears 100. I thought it would be a little thing, and you know, they go out, they wave, they talk, but you got to take your cue from the people involved, and you could see, Rich, that it meant more to them than perhaps people expected.
Yeah, I, you know, because of our media credential, didn't have to wait in any of the long lines that soured some folks who were out there at a very crowded event. But in terms of the content, I was impressed as well. And there was depth in all of these legacy panels. They were hour long, about 7-8 of them on Saturday, with players from the 1963 championship team, the 85 team, different positions, guys who have been really good at their positions in the past and in the present day. And it all came together. You could not leave there without a deeper appreciation for the history of this team, but also so much of the weekend celebration centered on the potential for season 100. It would have been a much different feel to the whole event if they hadn't gone 12-4 last year and won the division and pushed themselves to the cusp of what unmistakably now is a, you know, I don't necessarily want to say Super Bowl do or die season, but there is no question leaving this weekend what this team believes it can accomplish and what the teams and players of the past are pushing it to accomplish. And you left there just with an uplifted, energetic feeling about where this team is and what it means to a lot of people because of how rich the history is. Very few franchises could duplicate that, and I think the Bears did a really good job.
Yeah, Rich, definitely deep run or die. I mean, that's kind of how it feels to me for the coming season.
Yeah.
And as for the Bears 100 thing, I talked about the moment that hit me most in transition with Mullion Haw, but so I don't want to like spoil the water or anything. What was the moment that hit you hardest as you were there for the couple of days that you were?
Yeah, there were a few. I'll list just a couple. The loudest ovation at the opening ceremony on Friday night was Devin Hester being called out. And that ceremony also included the introduction of 6 Hall of Famers in their gold jackets.
Yep.
And for Devin to get that ovation, number one, tells me he'll be the 7th guy to get the gold jacket. I mean, it's just that's what's going to happen with him. And it was just sort of a reminder that obviously he's in his element in Chicago, but the current generation of fans who are paying money to attend an event like this, that's their guy. I mean, it's Urlacher and who backed out because of what he said was food poisoning, but Hester is their guy. And so that sort of framed for me the audience for this event. But it was the defensive line panel. I did not attend Virginia McCaskey's talk yesterday because I was in a panel with Ryan Pace's 3 top lieutenants. And everything I've read and heard about the Virginia McCaskey panel was really cool. But for me, it was the D-line panel, specifically Ed Obradovich, Dan Hampton, Tommy Harris, and Akeem Hicks. So those are 3 guys, the first 3, either won the NFL championship or NFC championship, and then Akeem. And those 3 championship players were openly challenging Hicks to accept the responsibility for this 2019 to jump through its championship window, because all three of those guys know how fleeting success is. They won, and then they didn't win again. They didn't get back there. Mm. And their point openly to him was, not only do you have to shoot your shot, you got to make your shot. And you could feel it. I mean, it was like a pregame locker room speech to him that you would hear in a locker room maybe before the NFC title game. Like, you've got to do this for the city. You've got to do this for all these fans. And it brought an immediacy to the moment, bridging to the past in all these different generations. And you understand that while, yes, the Bears have this rich history, part of their history is that their championships are mostly from a bygone era, and that this team has not had the success in the last 50 years that, you know, teams like the Steelers have or the 49ers have had. Not to say, you know, the Patriots too. And Akeem brings the microphone to his mouth and he pauses. It's very dramatic and you could feel the tension in the air. And he just said, I accept all of your challenges. And the place went nuts. Wow. And you just realized at that point that so much is building behind this 2019 team. And there is a lot on them. And I just think if you're Akeem Hicks or you're Eddie Jackson, you're up on these panels, you would have to have a brain made of cement not to take away and bring this burden with you, bring this momentum from these other forces with you to Halas Hall in training camp and every week of the season, knowing what is at stake.
You know what else it was to me, Rich? It was very human. It wasn't necessarily these players in their helmets and in their armor. You saw these faces and you saw how these superheroes have aged. And there was an undercurrent of reality and mortality. Maybe for those of us who weren't necessarily what you're talking about, the Devin Hester era millennial fan, perhaps, but those of us who did come of age as Walter Payton was becoming Walter Payton, and seeing the 85 larger than life figures aren't really in many cases larger than life anymore. And I thought that the not to get all Lion King here, but the football circle of life is something that was really tangible. When you see so many people from so many generations with Virginia McCaskey still there and still a part of it. I thought that was really very powerful.
That's a great point. That's a great point. I mean, just to take that defensive line panel, for example, you know, you have Ed Obradovich all the way down to Akeem Hicks. And, you know, what is it they say about experience? Like, it's experience is something you need when you don't have it and you only get it because you go through something and don't have it. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, the youth is lost on the young. That was the sort of this underlying subtext to the whole weekend, is that you have these players who have experienced success and they are aging. And, you know, to take away the physical side of it, because, you know, seeing Gale Sayers, the ovation for him was not as loud as I thought it would be, because I think people were just in shock about how frail he looked. But to take the physical side out of it and just to see that these men have just aged, and it just naturally aged, is there is an appreciation for the cycle of it. And there was just such an open urge from these players whose careers are over to these players whose careers are ongoing, just saying, you know, you got to make the most of this because it ends. It ends. And then one way or another, you are a part of this franchise, which is so rich through the past 99 years. And I'm with you. You know, everything from seeing the Fridge rap his verse from the Super Bowl Shuffle, which was a hilarious moment, you know, that to me was another one that stuck with me, because for most of the weekend, the Fridge is, I mean, he's in ill health as well. And they asked him about Walter Payton, and he didn't really elaborate on Walter, and you just understand where the Fridge is physically. But then that Super Bowl Shuffle moment put him back in 1985. And I think a lot of the players who came through and were on stage at some point had that moment where they were transported back, and it allowed every fan there to experience that type of time travel. And it's special. There was nothing like it. And I agree, the mortality of it all was right in your face the entire time.
So top of the Chicago Tribune sports section is a piece by our guy. You're listening to him, Rich Campbell. You can follow him on Twitter, Rich_Campbell. And it's a retelling, I guess, from a certain perspective. It's Josh Lucas's perspective of the Khalil Mack trade. You said you were on the panel. I think you were on with Lucas then at some point. Reading the way you wrote it, it's fun to see a different perspective of what happened this last offseason and that Saturday acquisition of one of the best players in the NFL, Khalil Mack. But it also, and rightfully so, it feels like everybody in that player personnel department, everybody from Ryan Pace on down, kind of feels like they get to spike the ball again on the trade they made, and I'm totally cool with it.
That's not going to go away anytime soon. Just to be clear, I just attended that panel, was in the audience.
Got
that's
you.
The way it worked with anyone who wasn't Dan Pompey and Don Pearson, who were up there with Virginia McCaskey and George on Sunday. But it was an opportunity to hear from three of Ryan Pace's confidants who really don't speak to the media at all. You know, they just don't have the opportunity. So it was a public forum for them, and that might have been the best attended by media of the weekend simply for that reason. And that panel was called Building the Future, and of course, Mack is such a big part of that. And it was interesting to feel from those three guys the same excitement that I think every fan felt when they got this guy, and how really, you know, this is not a computer, you know, running a franchise. This is not Madden, and you're running a franchise with a computer. These are humans who are making decisions and making evaluations, and there's drama to it all, and it's time-consuming, and there's a heavy investment. And to hear Josh Lucas's account of the trade, we've heard Nagy's, and we've heard Ryan Pace's, and we've heard Khalil's, but from someone who was close to the heart of the action but not necessarily in it, listening to Lucas tell that story, you felt that adrenaline all over again. And I think with Khalil, there is this sense that the best is yet to come for him because he wasn't with the team through the offseason last year. He showed up 8 days before the first game, and he had such an amazing season, you couldn't help but think, whoa, what if this guy is able to be with the team all spring? And even seeing him out on the practice field at OTAs when we've been out there, it's a bit of a shock. Because, yeah, you're reminded, yeah, 52 plays for these guys. And Lucas had a line at the end of his story that said, basically, you know, we think about the next 2 years. So that's the number he gave. We think about the next 2 years and what's about to happen. Okay, that's obviously coincides with Trubisky's rookie contract. The next 2 years of what's about to happen. And he thinks that when they get through that, they'll look back and think that the Khalil Mack trade was the genesis of it. And for a weekend at which stories were told from all different eras, that is the story of the current era. That, all right, we traded for this guy. It was super dramatic. It was unexpected. And then here we go. And for us to have that awareness in the moment here is cool. And Lucas did a good job telling that story.
It's also gone very quietly that Khalil Mack has been here for every voluntary workout. There are a lot of guys in his position that could find all kinds of perfectly legitimate reasons to not be here. That says something to me. It's got to say something internally, too, that if it's good enough for 52, it's good enough for you.
Yeah, there's no question. And you make a really important point, Dan, that let's take a team like the Ravens, for example. When they had Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, those two guys were not at their voluntary offseason programs, and it was really accepted in that organization, and they obviously played great. Both of them are Hall of Famers when they would show up. But Lucas had this point yesterday, said that after the Raiders, you know, use all the draft picks that the Bears traded them in this trade, we will be able to make a side-by-side comparison of the on-field production of all of these guys. Khalil Mack and his All-Pro nominations and all his sacks and his forced fumbles versus all four, you know, however many draft picks the Raiders use out of this trade. And then you could side-by-side compare it. But Lucas said you can't give a true side-by-side measure of this trade without establishing a value for what the team calls a multiplier effect, mm-hmm. which is exactly what you're referring to, is that the effect he has on others as being their best defensive player, but also a man who's as committed and as hardworking as he is. And sometimes this stuff just seems like, you know, rah-rah cliche stuff. But with Khalil, he he really is bought in like that. It makes him so valuable to them. And he has been there this offseason. We'll see if it continues through, let's say, an offseason in which they're not changing the defense. But for this offseason, we can recognize it as, yes, they are in a defensive transition, and Khalil Mack understood the importance of being here to help lead it. It's only going to help them.
Real quickly, Rich, what did you see out of Mitchell Trubisky at this event or over these few days and his participation and kind of buy-in of the whole thing?
It's important, and I thought it was very solid. So there were a couple things. First of all, when he was on the panel with Jim McMahon on Saturday morning, Trubisky is really good in these situations. He gets it. I mean, he can be funny. He can be a dude. You know, McMahon, for those who haven't seen it, brought out sunglasses and a headband for him, and Trubisky rolled with it, and it was really funny and kind of a cool moment for McMahon to engage that way. And Trubisky just to play off that. And, you know, Mitch, who can get a little bit robotic when he is speaking to the media about the team and his development stuff. Yeah, but he gets it. I mean, he truly has progressed from the guy who arrived here with fans sort of scratching their head or even some upset from the baggage of previous quarterbacks and then being unexpectedly the target of this trade up. I think Mitch has done a really good job, you know, sort of stiff-arming the whatever negativity there might be. And then when he was announced Friday night, the place went nuts. I thought, man, he has come a really long way. And to say nothing of him playing in the Pro Bowl as an alternate, you know, he had an average season. I think it was an encouraging 2018, but I think it was, in many ways, everybody sees the room for improvement. But then the place goes nuts for him Friday night. And then after the entire team had left the stage, Trubisky went out on this little catwalk that Kyle Fuller had used to debut the uniform. And he's just high-fiving fans. He went all the way, or he stayed out there late, and he's high-fiving all these fans. And it just hit me like, man, Jay Cutler, could you imagine the franchise's all-time leading passer, who, by the way, was not there, of course.
Right. They'd be throwing tomatoes at him. I mean, he wouldn't care.
Yes, yeah, right. Wouldn't care. It wouldn't mean anything to him. But for Mitch, he just gets it. He gets that it's important. And it's not even self-serving. It's not like, hey, I need these guys to be on my side. It's just that's what the quarterback does for a team, for a city that loves its team so much. So I think Mitch has fully embraced what that part of it is. And now he just has to play well. Because if he does, oh my gosh, he'll just own it. He'll just own the city. And it would be a worthy personality and character to have that type of privilege if he earns it.
Great stuff, Rich. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
Thank you, guys.
Rich Campbell brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want. At participating restaurants, additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Boy, that's outstanding. Go Bears, right?
Yeah, that's...
kind of gets you going a little bit.
That's full of stuff, is, right? Is what that is.
Hey,
oh,
when we come back, can we play a game?
Yeah, we can play a game.
Can we play... Find all the things wrong with this tweet.
Yes, we can play that game. Do we need to scroll Jose Canseco's Twitter feed for this, or
no,
is it something else?
No, it's not. It is an organization that should know better because they literally have the style book named after them. But we're going to play it. It is football related, so we're going to keep this thing about football. We're going to play What's Wrong with This Tweet.
And big thanks to Rich Campbell for the YAR trifecta during our conversation,
wearing
too.
Me out, man.
You know where we're headed. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score. A lot to come today. We got the Midday Midway coming up at 10:40. We're going to revisit some of the conversation we have with Theo Epstein, which is really interesting, really fun stuff. I wish we could share some of the off-the-air stuff.
We cannot.
As
although, if you want to see what Theo was up to just prior to his Hot Stove Cool music event on Friday night, which, by all accounts, went off swimmingly, and our guy Matt Spiegel sounded fantastic, and Lynn Casper was plugging away at the the slap in the base, you can head to 670 The Score or at 670 The Score on Twitter. We have tweeted out our leftovers video with Cubs general manager, Cubs president, Cubs god, Theo Epstein.
Who knew that Theo Epstein is dying out of here?
I did not see that coming. I really didn't. We did one with Len Casper as well, and his love for the Bengals is...
yeah.
It runs deep.
Did you see what happened later in the day? I don't know if he showed you, because I was at the gym, and he was talking a lot about...
You guys went to the gym together?
No, I went to the gym, and he was talking. This is in the middle of the game. He's doing the game.
Yeah.
And my phone buzzes, and he sends me a picture of an autographed 8x10 glossy that said, "To Len."
No.
From Susanna Hoffs.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had to do a little fact-checking on Susanna
Hoffs. He literally
Hoffs.
Said, "I can die now." Like, he was... I did some fact-checking, too. I had no idea she was married to Jay Roach.
Jay Roach.
Directed all the Austin Powers movies.
And, no kidding.
And
that
Meet
guy.
The Parents.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's a Hollywood power couple.
That
there.
Is a Hollywood power couple.
That's why she had cameos in all those movies.
I did not know that.
Yeah, but I did not know how important to young Len Casper Susanna Hoffs of the Bengals
no,
was.
But I get it.
Yes. And he had all these videos.
I
went up to the press box, and he's like showing me old videos. Like, yeah, look at this one. And here she's covering Feel Like Making Love. Watch this. I'm like... Dude.
You got to go up to the press box and hang out with all the people we talked to on the radio, and I edited leftovers and had to do work. Well, thanks for that.
It was really fun. It was the press box table was Coomer, JD,
yeah.
Miska.
Zaidman, right?
Yeah, yeah. Zach and Len.
And so, you. Yeah. there were cackles aplenty. Zackles aplenty.
Their producer, Paula, has to remind them. They have like a Coom Wrangler, because otherwise he'll forget to go in and do the
Coom Wrangler.
Because what happens is they get going in these conversations in the press room, and he calls her like the fun spoiler or something, because it's like, oh yeah, I actually have to go do the game.
Coom,
now.
Someone has to go make you do this dream job of yours.
Right, there's someone who's
sorry, buddy.
He's Terry on remote.
Exactly. He's Terry. Ah, buddy, I don't know. Hold on. I got to fix my thing. Exactly. But it's they've somebody in charge of dragging them out of the press lunchroom so they can go do their jobs. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. Okay, you want to play a game here?
I do.
Sunday morning, and I'm doing my Sunday morning thing, which means I do the Sunday Sudoku, I do the Sunday Jumble.
Oh, that part of it, okay.
I do the word game. I've got a series of things that I do. There's the secondary Patrick Berry Wall Street Journal puzzle.
Just a question to peer behind the curtain of one Dan Bernstein here on a Sunday morning. Do you have to do them all in a particular order, or do they just all kind of have to happen?
There's a right time and place and feeling for which puzzle, depending on my brain frequency.
I see.
Like, I know when it's the... I can't explain why or how, but I know...
Nor do I need you to.
...when it's the right time to do a certain kind of puzzle.
That makes
cool.
sense. I get that.
Cool.
But it all has to be done.
I get that.
Hopefully my daughter has made coffee that's strong enough, and she did. So then I check Twitter, and I see... I had to read this three times to figure out what was going on.
Okay.
And it is from literally the AP. They've got they have a college football Twitter feed.
Yes, they do.
Called AP_top25.
Love it. Very useful during the season.
I do too. And it's a tease to a Ralph Russo column. But I'm just going to read it to you.
Okay.
Okay. Column: Heisman Trophy winners Rashan Salaam, Carson Palmer, and Eric Crouch are still waiting to get into the College Football Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Next sentence. So are the late Jerome Brown and Eric Dickerson.
Oh, okay.
All right. So, and I read it, I'm like, wait, what? What stands out at you as being wrong about this?
I think they killed some people.
I think so. Well, they killed one person, for sure.
I think they killed some people in the tweet.
I think they may have reanimated another person. Look, this is the AP. Heisman Trophy winners Rashan Salaam, Carson Palmer, and Eric Crouch are still waiting to get into the College Football
Hall of
Fame. So are the late Jerome Brown and Eric Dickerson. Okay. Eric Dickerson is alive.
Really alive.
Yeah. He's very, very much alive.
Like, you see him on television broadcasts every now and again.
Correct. And Rashan Salaam is not
so much
waiting to get into the College Football Hall of Fame. It's true he's not in, but he is not waiting because he has been deceased now for some time.
Right.
So when I sent out this tweet, I think it was Nick Shepkowski who said it's like George Offman is writing for AP underscore top 25. When
Skip Carey, whose pappy was the legendary Harry and whose son is Skip, died in his sleep last night. Make that his son Chip.
still the greatest of all time.
No matter how many times I ruined an update, I knew I would never, ever get there.
Somebody's dead. It might be Perry. It might be Carrie.
Doesn't matter.
It might be Skip. It might be Chip. We don't know.
Plus, we're not burying the children of Johnny Red Kerr.
Someone died in someone's sleep. Maybe their own. Maybe someone else's.
Well, that the among other yesterday's attendees at the wake, all the children of Johnny Red Kerr, who will be buried on Thursday.
Well, it's news to them. They went to the wake and said, "Hey, thanks for coming. By the way, you will all be buried on Thursday."
It just never gets old.
And if you're thinking, was the tease and reading of that tweet just an excuse to replay those sound bites?
Caught us.
The answer is yes.
Caught us.
Indeed it is. And this segment was sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouth-watering water. The Cubs are at the Rockies tonight. You Darvish on the mound. Herman Marquez, no joke.
Oh, dude, that guy's for real.
And do we know who the White Sox starter is against Anibal Sanchez?
It's not Lopez or Giolito.
Is it Odis Ramer d'Espagne?
My clam will play at first base.
It is not your clam. It is not. It is not George's clam. Is that the proper pronunciation of Odis Ramer d'Espagne?
I believe so.
Although, is that Odis Ramer d'Espagne?
That's a tough one, man. I mean, as much as broadcasters, pro or otherwise, are committed to getting the name right, that is a brutal starting pitcher to have in the lineup. You got to find a nickname for a guy like that. A nickname that he wants, by the way. You don't just make one up. Well, because I always got angry with, like, you know, typically it was minor league broadcasters who would just, like, create a nickname for a guy so that they didn't have to find the pronunciation of the name. And you can always kind of tell when it happens. Like, like Matthew Bull, you know, the straight Jesuit kid, the guy who runs the 100-yard dash?
Yeah,
right. And some people have been like, oh, he's White Lightning. Well, turns out, no, he doesn't like that nickname, and you don't need one when you're Matthew
Bull. It's slammer time.
Yeah, right. You just don't need one of those. Find out the guy's name. It's easy enough to do.
Yeah, it ends up being a little paternalistic and sometimes kind of racist when it's like, yeah, I'm not going to – I don't have to worry about your complicated name because I can't do it, so I'm just going to come up with something else to make it easier.
It's rough.
It reminds me of Pat Morita. His name's not Pat.
No.
His name's Noriyuki.
Yes.
But he had to become Pat. I think we're probably at a time now where we don't have to do stuff like that anymore.
I hope so. Yeah. So, well, and the accessibility of information and audio makes it easier to find these guys' names pronounced properly anyway.
My sister pointed this out to me at one point. You remember the infomercials with Sally Struthers talking about bereft children in third world countries?
Yes.
And they would always introduce the child, no matter who it was and how you're trying to help, by, they said, meet Melissa. Like, her name is definitely not Melissa.
Not a chance.
She's in Ethiopia. That is not her name.
She is being buried with Johnny Redcrest's kids, though.
but they have to make it just so you will think of the person as completely human or worthy of your attention. They have to give it a name that's recognizable to you. Otherwise, it's like, oh, yeah, I can't pronounce that. She doesn't get my money. She can go die in a ditch. I don't care. Right?
Suzanne, you can't just name these children. They're not yours. A little bit later on this morning, I want to pitch you on something. I noticed a crack in the armor here on your part, so I'm just going to try and make things go my way a little bit later on. The Midday Midway, though, is on the way, and we have tales from Shark World. We have a fast food chain caught lying, and one of the strangest trending topics on Twitter that I've seen in a couple of weeks.
All right, I have bad, wrong tourism.
Ah.
I have tourism that should not exist.
Both bad and wrong.
I also have a Twitter thread from an English writer telling a story you will not believe.
Excellent. The Midday Midway is on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
the first half or the second half. You know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Midway is brought to you by Door Systems. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR. We started out talking a little bit of baseball, the Kyle Schwarber resurgence. Love their horn section, by the way, the Kyle Schwarber resurgence. Really, they're just a terrific group.
Wouldn't that be an acapella group?
Yeah, I was just they switched from acapella to playing some horns, maybe. Just really like Tower of Power kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah, we could do this, but let's take it on the road.
We need to talk also about, perhaps later on in the show, the effect of all of this run on Joe Maddon and his future with the Cubs. Maybe on the other side of Theo Epstein coming up at the top of the hour. And a little bit of the White Sox, too, that just the how much fun it is to beat up on the damn stinking Royals.
It's cathartic. It feels good. It hurts them, which feels better for you. It's really everything you could ask for of a weekend baseball series.
Talk about one of the swaggiest plays we've seen all year of a tag being applied to Marcell Ozuna by Javier Baez, who can't even be troubled to look at his sliding opponent while he's pointing at the catcher to acknowledge his terrific throw. The catcher is then making a click a photo mechanic to tell Javier Baez that's a great play, and the implacable Kyle Hendricks is looking on and even shows emotion because of the quality of the play. What else we talk? Rich Campbell on the Bears.
A lot of Bears, yeah.
It was a really emotional weekend.
It really was. I'm going to sell you on something a little later on the show for the Bears 100 thing. You have shown a crack in your logic, and I'm going to exploit
it. Oh, I'll show you my crack.
I know you will. I asked you not to. Where is HR? So this popped around, and I was talking with Rick about this during the break. We keep the Midday Midway a little sportsy to start. There are reports floating around. You tell me, Rick, if you believe this, Dan, if you believe this, it just seems weird. Sam Amick of The Athletic, good reporter, solid stuff, not impugning the reporter at all here. It just feels like this is coming from weird spots. Sources say that some Warriors players, including Kevon Looney and Draymond Green and all that kind of stuff, are a little salty that Kevin Durant hasn't come back sooner. In their play against the Raptors. And I don't know, you read through this. I don't know how you feel about it, if you've been watching the finals as steadily as others, although I get the sense that not many people are perhaps watching as closely as years past without LeBron, even though it seems like there are always sources ready to try and split the Warriors since Kevin Durant has arrived for fairly obvious reasons. It doesn't really pass the smell test for me. It doesn't quite taste right. Now, I'll be very interested to see, you know, what happens this offseason. I just thought it was worth bringing up here since we were going to be so baseball and Bears heavy right here in the Midday Midway.
Well, it's always been something that has, that tension has existed. They've done a decent job tamping it down of somebody who's going to become a free agent. This is sort of like we lived with in San Antonio with Kawhi Leonard when
a team that
usually never had that kind of drama has that kind of drama. Were they winning, we wouldn't be hearing about it. It is usually because they've been on the wrong side of enough scores that that's when this thing starts to seep in.
I don't trust it. I wouldn't be surprised if a couple guys think that. I just think that it's that they're just wrong, essentially. I'd be floored if Kevin Durant, with a chance to maybe have his third finals MVP and cement how much he matters to this team, would miss an opportunity to come back and just cement that Warriors part of his legacy. I'd be floored if he didn't take that opportunity if he had it.
You watch the show Chernobyl?
I do. Oh, I finished it this weekend.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my goodness. Is it good?
People love it. And they love it so much, guess what they're doing? They're going to Chernobyl.
No!
Yep, this from LiveScience.com. At the site of what is arguably the most horrific accidental nuclear explosion in history, tourism is booming. The success of HBO's dramatic series Chernobyl seems to have boosted the region's tourism industry.
Like from what, 0 to 4?
With leaders of guided tours to Chernobyl claiming that bookings have increased by about 40% compared to last year.
Come on.
HBO debuted Chernobyl on May 6th. By the end of the month, Ukrainian tour company Solo East saw a 30% rise in tourists compared to May 2018. Bookings for June, July, and August are up by about 40%, according to company director Sergei Ivanchuk. After the Chernobyl reactor exploded in 1986, radioactive particles quickly dispersed into the surrounding area. Approximately 200,000 people were evacuated and relocated. Authorities declared a so-called exclusion zone covering 18 miles around the site of the explosion. The abandoned town remains uninhabited to this day. But in 2010, the exclusion zone was opened to tourists, and Ukrainian officials declared that any lingering radiation was, quote, negligible, unquote.
What?
It's not negligible. Since then, Chernobyl tourism has grown in popularity, and the HBO series may have sparked even greater interest in the blighted destination. Radiation makes the zone particularly interesting.
Did they think it was fiction?
Tour company Chernobyl Tour says on its website, there are visits to landmarks featured in the HBO series, the bunker where local officials initially decided to delay evacuation.
Oh my God.
And there's pictures of people at the big Ferris wheel in the abandoned city.
Growing like a ninth arm and a third eye.
Monuments to victims, vacant and overgrown homes, an eerie abandoned amusement park, and the reactor that exploded, which is now entirely covered by a metal dome measuring 344 feet high.
Yeah, they did cover that thing up.
They do say, we definitely would not recommend you staying at them for a long time.
Or, you know, moments. Don't stay for more than 3 or 4.
Don't go there!
Idiots. So, you know what the Impossible Burger is, right? Yeah. We talked about it a little while ago on the Midday Minute. Right, it's the meatless burger that apparently has swept through the nation. I have not had one yet. You have not, I imagine?
No.
And I know that Jay and Rick have not had it. I didn't think so. But a Brooklyn, this from Eater, New York, a Brooklyn location of the fast food chain Burger King has been advertising that it sells the meat-free Impossible Whopper, but instead has been sending customers regular old beef whoppers without telling them. At least one vegetarian customer did.
This meatless burger is great.
At least one vegetarian customer didn't realize until after he'd already eaten two whoppers, simply believing the ads boasting the two burgers taste the same. For at least the last few weeks, the 736 Broadway franchise of the burger chain featured the Impossible Whopper, 100% Whopper, 0% beef. That's
every
the tagline.
Every time you talk about it, I want to break into song like from the Man of La Mancha. Every time you mention the Impossible,
what do you want to do?
Burger.
Impossible Dream?
Yes.
You want to do Man of La Mancha? You want to do Dulcinea?
Dream.
You could do
time.
That one.
No, every time something
Dulcinea.
About
Dulcinea. A 35. So apparently, this Whopper, the Impossible Burger, tastes so good that nobody realized that they're eating the real thing, and I dare tell you, no one probably cared. They just wanted to be hipsters ordering the Impossible Whoppers.
I saw this today, and I had to share it with you. There is a Twitter user named Sixth Form Poet.
Okay.
A lot of followers, a couple hundred thousand followers, and appears to be a writer. Maybe this is a pseudonym for a known writer based in England, and he or she wrote that it's a he, I guess. I don't know. We'll never know who it actually is.
Sure.
But this is what was written today. It is a string of tweets. Just listen. My dad died. Classic start to a funny story. He was buried in a small village in Sussex. I was really close to my dad, so I visited his grave a lot. I still do, parenthetically here. Don't worry, it gets funnier. I always took flowers, and my mom visited a lot. She always took flowers. My grandparents were still alive then, and they always took flowers. My dad's grave frequently resembled a solid third place at the Chelsea Flower Show. Nice, but I felt bad for the guy buried next to my dad. He never had flowers. He died on Christmas Day, age 37. No one left him flowers. And now there's a pop-up florist in the grave next door. So I started buying him flowers. And this in all caps. I started buying flowers for a deceased man I'd never met. I did this for quite some time, but I never mentioned it to anyone. It was a little private joke with myself. I was making the world a better place, one bunch of flowers at a time. I know it sounds weird, but I came to think of him as a friend. I wondered if there was a hidden connection between us, something secretly drawing me to him. Maybe we went to the same school, played for the same football club or whatever. So I Googled his name, and 10 seconds later, I found him. his wife didn't leave him flowers because he'd murdered her.
Oh, God.
On Christmas Day.
Oh, after
he murdered his wife, he murdered her parents, too.
Oh, my God.
And after that, he jumped in front of the only train going through Balcom Tunnel that Christmas night.
Oh!
That was why no one ever left him flowers.
Oh.
No one except me, of course. I left him flowers. I left him flowers every couple of weeks. Every couple of weeks for 2.5 years.
Oh.
I felt terrible for his wife and her parents. Now, I wasn't going to leave them flowers every couple of weeks for 2.5 years, but I did feel like I owed them some sort of apology. I found out where they were buried, bought flowers, and drove to the cemetery.
Okay.
As I was standing at their graves, mumbling apologies, a woman appeared behind me. She wanted to know who I was and why I was leaving flowers for her aunt and grandparents. Awkward. I explained. She said, okay, that's weird, but quite sweet. I said, thanks. Yeah, it is a bit weird. And oh, God, I asked her out for a drink.
Good, come.
Incredibly, she said yes. 2 years later, she said yes again when I asked her to marry me because that's how I met my wife.
That's an incredible story.
I mean, Twitter's a horrible, horrible place.
Yes.
But when it brings you stuff like this, and this has been shared, retweeted like 500,000 times already. I don't know if it's real or not. I'm guessing it is.
Yeah, I mean...
But if it's done by a professional writer doing professional writer things, we may all be part of some experiment here. This may be an exercise in some sort of ironic to how these things get shared.
Uh-huh.
We could be unwittingly being part of an experiment. But regardless, what an amazing story.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. A lot of stuff from over the weekend. Speaking of, one thing that's kind of lived on, and it's cool, because of what the Cubs have done and what they did do on Friday, we had a chance, you and I, to sit down with Theo Epstein on Friday when we were doing our show from the bleachers. Really good talk with Theo, some good pieces of conversation. And we wanted to bring some of it back to you because really, a lot of the poignant stuff lives on, and it still matters, even after a weekend sweep of the St. Louis Cardinals. So that's where we'll head next, little Cubs talk. And, oh, by the way, I think I can convince you, or at least start to, on something Bears-related later on in the hour as well. It is Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.